This podcast is a production of KCRW.
One warm Saturday night in April 2021, Rob Reynolds got a call on his cell phone. He was sitting on the couch in his apartment in Hollywood watching TV. It was late, nearly midnight, but he picked up.
I was always worried on the weekend, so I'd made sure to be home just because things would happen. So when I saw that call, I wanted to answer just to see if there was any issues.
The voice on the other end belonged to a man Rob knew named Dennis. Dennis was calling from Veterans Row.
He's like, "You need to come out here." And I was like, "Why? What's going on?" He said, "I think there's, you know, people are fighting." You know, my initial thought was, well, some of these guys fight all the time, so they'll get over it. You know, when you're in that environment, that stressful environment, you know, emotions get the best of them. While I was on the phone with him, he said, "I think someone just got killed."
That someone was a veteran named Brian Prentice. Brian's death would be the beginning of the end of Veterans Row, though the end was still farther away than anyone thought. First, there would be the blame, a lot of finger-pointing over who was responsible for this tragedy. I don't mean in a murder mystery way. There was a clear suspect in Brian's killing immediately. But blame in terms of whose fault is the situation that led to this violent murder, which led me to some culprits I never would have expected to find. I'm Anna Scott. This is City of Tents, Veterans Row. Episode 3, Blame Game. Veterans who witnessed the murder tell me it started with a late night argument between a guy named Pedro Flores and his girlfriend.
So they had a really bad fight.
That's Army veteran Dean Lee. He says things escalated after some other veterans got involved in the fight, including a man relatively new to Veterans Row, Brian Prentice. According to a report by the medical examiner's office, Brian and others confronted Pedro. Then Pedro walked to his old blue Chevy HHR, a type of small SUV. It was parked in front of the tents. Three men, including Brian, surrounded the vehicle as Pedro got behind the wheel.
I can see the look on his face. And Brian's like, "Hold on, you're not going anywhere. You're not going anywhere. We want to talk to you, Pedro. We want to talk to you." He's like, "I'm not talking about anything." And right about that time, Pedro put it in gear.
Pedro pulled away from the curb, swung his vehicle around to face oncoming traffic, and then drove straight into Brian.
And I could see him. He was somersaulting underneath the car. And we were all running down the street, throwing things in his car, and we're going, "Stop, stop, you have somebody underneath, you have somebody underneath there." And he was like...
But Pedro kept driving, dragging Brian more than 400 feet. In court, Pedro's attorney said Pedro was trying to flee the men who'd surrounded his car and didn't hit Brian on purpose. After Pedro hit Brian, another Army veteran, Darby Sandoval, had the idea to get into Pedro's car through an open window and stop him from driving. Navy veteran John Raposa says this happened as Pedro was swerving up and down the block.
He was coming at me and some other guys, and then Darby jumped and tried to pull him off the driver's seat, and he ran his legs over, and then sped off down the road, and the cops got him.
Darby went to the hospital, and Brian lay in the middle of the road, not moving. Dean went over to him and saw that Brian was bloody. His black puffy vest and camouflage pants were torn and covered with gravel.
I was in shock. I couldn't believe it. To see somebody's final, a veteran, their final exit in the street like that.
A short time later, Rob arrived at Veterans Row. By then, Saturday had slipped into the earliest hours of Easter Sunday.
So I wanted to go see for myself. I got to a part where I saw, you know, a large... a strip of blood. It was kind of in an S shape, like 200 feet long, and walked up to where Brian was, and, you know, it was him.
If you've driven through Brentwood, you're likely very familiar with this homeless encampment outside of the VA on San Vicente Boulevard.
This is a Fox 11 story that aired the same morning Brian was killed.
This is where the homeless hit-and-run homicide happened just after midnight. LASD says it all started when two homeless men got in an argument.
The homicide was covered by other channels, too.
Flores was booked for murder and assault with a deadly weapon. He is being held on $2 million bail. And this is one of several homeless homicides that have happened in our region in the last week. Reporting live here in Brentwood, I'm Haley Winslow.
Pedro Flores ended up charged with murdering Brian Prentice and the attempted murder of Darby Sandoval, the guy who tried to jump through the car window. At the time of this recording, the case was still working its way through court. The dead man, Brian, was one of 85 unhoused people to die by homicide in LA County in 2021, a record at that time. Most of those deaths did not make the news. But Veterans Row, with its long line of tall tents and matching American flags, was a very visible encampment. Also, the fact that this happened in Brentwood, where the last high-profile homicides were probably the stabbing deaths of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman in 1994, attracted attention. And some people in Brentwood said, look, the responsibility is with the veterans, and the encampment pulls them to bad choices. Brian chose to stay at Veterans Row because it was there. Here's Michelle Biznoff, head of the Brentwood Community Council.
Let's talk about the person who was killed on San Vicente. That man was scheduled to go into housing 2 days after he was killed. If he had simply accepted transitional housing or some form of shelter on the VA for just 2 days, he would be in housing right now and working towards a productive life. But he's dead, and he's dead because he chose to stay in that encampment. It's a dangerous place to be.
Once I looked into Brian's reasons for being at Veterans Row, though, it turned out to be a lot more complicated than that. Brian Lee Prentice was 51 years old, grew up in South Pasadena, where his dad was once mayor. Brian served in the Marines. He also had a history of meth use, according to court records. But when Brian showed up at the encampment in March 2021, Rob says he was looking for help. He wanted to check into a drug rehab on the VA campus.
He came wanting to get inside right away. He needed help to get in. Again, he wasn't there that long, and he actually did everything he needed to do to get inside. He was always kind of right on it.
On the campus, there are a few different options for substance abuse rehab.
Let me just turn around this.
One overcast morning, I take a drive around the VA campus with Matt McGarren, who runs the VA's homelessness programs in LA as of the summer of 2021. I want to get a closer look at the help available here.
These two buildings here are the domiciliary buildings, the mental health residential rehabilitation treatment programs. Two buildings.
We're looking at a pair of three-story buildings built in the 1930s, white, smooth stucco boxes with terracotta roof tiles, with different substance abuse and mental health treatment programs inside. Brian Prentice actually couldn't get treatment in these buildings because he didn't qualify for VA health care. Showing up at this campus as a veteran doesn't mean you can walk into any of its buildings and get help. Not only do you have to qualify, but it's also built like an actual fortress. It's surrounded by fencing and locked gates. You easily could walk 10 minutes around the perimeter to find an entrance. There's one traditional homeless shelter here, which is pretty new. It's in a makeshift-looking building that resembles a greenhouse.
Oh, this sort of sprung structure?
Yeah, yes, there's 50 beds in each. 50, not even beds, they're cubicles of beds.
Right, with the little partitions.
Right.
This shelter isn't a medical treatment program, but Brian wouldn't have qualified for it either without VA health care. He couldn't even get into the VA-run Tent City you heard about in the last episode, which ended up being a forerunner to Veterans Row. To be sure, most of the veterans on Veterans Row do qualify for health care, according to the VA. The VA calls its campground CTRS, Care, Treatment, and Rehabilitative Services.
What are the reasons that you find that people who are on the street right outside the campus don't want to come into CTRS?
But they have a bunch of their own reasons.
Are there any common ones that come up a lot?
So we are on federal property, so there's some things you can't do on federal property that you could do out in the community. And I think that's a deterrent. There's substance use. They do have, out on San Vicente, some of them have barbecue grills, so they make fires, and they can't do those kinds of things on our property. So I think those restrictions are the main deterrent.
My feeling is if I'm going to be in a tent, I'd rather be in my own personal tent where I can sleep naked if I want to. You can bleep that out if you need to.
This is Navy veteran Jeffrey Powers. You met him in the last episode, crawling in and out of his tent at the VA campground with a bad knee. Now, he's moved over the fence into Veterans Row. And he says, yeah, one reason he left was he got sick of the rules on the VA campus. But the bigger reason, he says, is that he expected to be housed by now. Jeffrey qualifies for a special type of rental voucher for low-income veterans. But in Los Angeles, the VA is notoriously slow at handing out these vouchers. For Jeffrey, he got sick of crawling in and out of the VA's little tents and being searched every time he came and went while waiting. So he picked the relative freedom of Veterans Row. He'd still rather live in a nice apartment, though.
Probably somewhere in, you know, Santa Monica or, you know, next to Stevie Nicks.
That would be cool. Are you a fan?
I'm a huge fan. Love you, Stevie.
I'm surprised by how fluid the population of Veterans Row is, changing all the time, and how many veterans float between out here and programs in there on the VA campus, like Jeffrey. Brian Prentice qualified for one residential rehab on the VA campus, run by an outside organization called New Directions. But he couldn't get in immediately. Rob helped him navigate admission.
Before Easter weekend, on a Friday before Easter weekend, one of the social workers contacted me and said that he was cleared to go to New Directions the following week and that he needed to get a COVID test. So I went and saw him on Friday before I went home for the weekend, and I told him to go get his COVID test, and then he was good to go, I think, Monday morning.
Brian was murdered early on Easter morning. What Veterans Row offered that the VA did not is something surprisingly hard to find anywhere in Los Angeles. An immediate place that you can walk into and get a roof over your head and a mattress to sleep on 24/7 with a strong sense of community, even if that community is dysfunctional.
I mean, it's like I can go sleep in some alleyway by myself or I could be with my brothers.
I'm sitting on the curb with John Raposa in front of his tent at Veterans Row, the one with all the Christmas lights. He's eating a cinnamon raisin bagel, dry, and telling me about the addiction that contributed to him losing his last apartment, right here in Brentwood. He says it started a long time ago with prescription painkillers for a back injury he got in the Navy.
I started with, like everybody else, with the OxyContin. Right. You know, oh, this isn't addictive. I knew it was.
Now he smokes fentanyl, which in recent years has become ubiquitous on the streets of Los Angeles. It's everywhere, often mixed in with other drugs. And it's cheap. You can get high for a few bucks. Years ago, when cocaine and heroin were the popular street drugs, it could cost two or three times that. Fentanyl is also deadly. Deaths of unhoused people in LA County went up by 56% in the year after the pandemic started, mostly because of an increase in overdoses. John knows it's dangerous, and also why it's still so hard to quit.
You feel good, you feel at peace, which is a really big thing. You're calm. It makes you very calm. So you get in a space where you really don't care if you die. You know, it's just like, okay, bum, bum, bum. It does that to you.
And the withdrawal when you stop taking it is brutal.
You lose control of your muscle coordination. You shake really badly. Your leg thrashes around. There's no comfortable position to be in. You can't sit still. You can't lay down. You can't stand. You can't walk. You feel exhausted, but you can't sleep. The only option is to get more of it and get it in your body. That's it.
Yeah.
So, and with fentanyl, I smoke it. Put it on a piece of tin foil. And, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Do you want to get off of it altogether?
Depends. I'd like to, but I've been off for so long, I'm afraid I'm going to have to be on something. But I can be on a controlled substance that they can give me, like Subutex.
Subutex is one brand name of a drug that prevents opiate withdrawal symptoms. John says he's already been in and out of rehab on the VA campus, and treating his addiction didn't solve his homelessness. So he got caught in a cycle.
Well, you can't be on the street and not end up doing something, because it's just impossible. I mean, to live in doorways and have no place to go to the bathroom, no place to shower, no place to wash your clothes, everyone hating on you. I mean, it's just a miserable situation to be in. It's probably the worst. Especially in the city, you're surrounded by wealth, you know?
He's open to rehab again and knows that if he can kick drugs, he'll also need to deal with the depression underneath the addiction.
I'm not suicidal, like directly suicidal. I mean, I wouldn't put a gun in my mouth, pull the trigger, but, you know.
Self-destructive?
Yeah, self-destructive, very self-destructive.
It's hard to generalize about why the veterans are here on Veterans Row. Not everyone uses substances, and not everyone who uses is a hardcore addict either. Some people at the camp have mental health issues and don't seem cognizant enough to sit for an interview, while others are perfectly lucid. And for most people, the circumstances and decisions that led them here don't even boil down to one thing. Michelle Biznoff said that if Brian Prentice hadn't stayed at Veterans Row, he'd be in a program getting off the street. But I think it's just as likely he'd be sleeping under a freeway overpass somewhere.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
As Rob remembers it, the Army veteran charged with Brian's murder, Pedro Flores, started sleeping at the Veterans Row camp about 8 months into the pandemic.
You know, he had been out in his car for a while and was finally like, hey, do you want a tent to sleep in so you don't have to just sleep in your car? And he said, yes, we got him into one.
At one point, social service workers placed Pedro in a hotel room temporarily. Sometimes nonprofits can use hotel rooms as temporary shelter.
So I remember he ended up having an episode at the hotel, and they asked him to leave. They removed him. He came back to the encampment, and at this time, when he came back, he was a different person. You know, he was very upset, agitated. Many times he would stop to ask if I heard other people, you know, plotting against him or doing things behind his back.
A street outreach worker connected to the LA County Department of Mental Health, who worked on Veterans Row at the time, told me Pedro often seemed angry and acted erratically, but not threatening anyone or himself. And if that's the case, you can't force someone to get help. One thing I didn't expect at Veterans Row was just how plugged in the VA and different homelessness nonprofits were to the encampment. These veterans weren't just out there on the street on their own. Many saw doctors on the VA campus while living at the encampment, and social service organizations regularly visited to offer help.
How are you doing this morning? Just so you know, this is Anna. Anna, this is Chris. On the right, this is Broderick.
Hello, nice to meet you.
Every Thursday morning, outreach workers from as many as a half dozen organizations gather to go tent by tent. I assume at first that they're making the veterans concrete offers of shelter or housing. But a lot of the time, what they're offering is something more squishy.
Well, the basics are, you know, nice cold water, especially on a hot day, some snacks, a hygiene kit, and then just some disarming stories about my own experience, which was relatively positive, but there were still some blemishes.
Chris Clark works for a special homeless veteran street outreach team created by the LA County Department of Mental Health. Chris served in the Army himself. Now, he says his ultimate goal is to get people into housing, but that takes a while. In 2021, the typical time to get a veteran a rental voucher and then find them an apartment was more than 4 months. The VA official you heard from earlier, Matt McGarren, told me that was partly because of the VA's overly complicated way of evaluating and prioritizing veterans for housing. He says since then, they've simplified it, and the wait is closer to 3 months. In any case, if you're doing street outreach, trying to get people into housing, but you don't have housing to offer on the spot, you're going to spend some time just getting to know people, building the trust to hopefully take them through that process. But here's the wild thing that Chris, the outreach worker, told me, that he views Veterans Row as a kind of service center.
The way I've painted Veterans Row, especially the people in Skid Row, veterans in Skid Row, is that at least you're right there, you're close to the services. Maybe it's a little bit of a ladder rung climb. You can keep moving up to permanent housing, which is, again, the overarching goal.
Do you remember Rob emailing Michelle Biznoff of the Brentwood Community Council saying he would bus all the homeless veterans in LA to Veterans Row? He's never done it, but here is a professional outreach worker telling me, on the record, he pretty much does just that. And on the one hand, I get it. It's an easier sell than convincing someone to go to a shelter with a curfew or no privacy, if you can even find a bed. And if the person wants to get onto the VA campus, at least they're right there. On the other hand, this encampment isn't a shelter. And someone got murdered here not too long ago. Rob says Chris is not an outlier, that employees with other organizations also treat Veterans Row as a holding tank for unhoused veterans who need a place to crash for a night or two while waiting to get into VA programs.
I know, it's ridiculous. We've had LASA bring people here. Veterans.
Like from other parts of the city?
Yes.
LASA is the Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority, the main agency that deals with homelessness in L.A.
Drive and ask if we can hold them for a night or two until they're trying to get them in somewhere safe to stay. So, and I'm not, you know, I'm not going to say no, it's a veteran.
I find this hard to believe. So Rob shows me a text message from somebody who works with LASA, asking if Rob has openings on Veterans Row. The text is not from anyone whose voice you'll hear in this episode. Because when I talk to people at the Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority, they tell me,
it is absolutely not our policy to transplant homeless people from one location to another.
Daniel Ornelas is an outreach worker with LASA and a veteran himself. I see him all the time on Veterans Row, but we're doing this interview over Zoom with a LASA PR person sitting in. Even though Daniel says he never brings people to Veterans Row,
if you've got to go to an encampment, Veterans Row is the place to go. They are all very neat. When you go down the street, they're all dressed right, dressed. Whereas when you go to a lot of other encampments, there's, you know, trash strewn about and things like that.
And Daniel says this about Rob.
He has what we strive to achieve with our clients, which is that rapport. Rob definitely has insight on a lot of the clients that I don't, because he has regular conversations with them, not the occasional conversation. And if I have a client that I'm looking for, I know I can reach out to Rob and he will get a message to him because he's there most of the day. Whereas a lot of times with encampments, if you go to a person's spot and they're not there, they don't have a neighbor that will deliver a message.
I did not expect Daniel to say this, but he and other professional helpers at Veterans Row treat Rob like one of the team. Like one day at Veterans Row, I'm standing right there when Daniel tells Rob some exciting news. He can get as many as 12 veterans here into motel rooms temporarily. But this offer is only for veterans who already have their rental vouchers and just need to find apartments. The idea is to get the veterans used to being inside again and give them a chance to clean up before meeting landlords. Daniel says he'll be back next week with a van, and he leaves it to Rob to find eligible veterans. A whole month later, however, Daniel tells me,
we're still efforting to get those people into the hotel. Hopefully I'll hear something back soon and bring some good news to the fellows tomorrow.
He doesn't, though. Daniel says the hotel thing fell apart partly because Rob gave him wrong information about how many veterans at Veterans Row had rental vouchers. And because the nonprofit in charge of actually booking the rooms didn't come through. And this is around where I start to get a big headache. Because this is the story of how LA County and City deal with street homelessness. I've seen it a lot reporting at different encampments. You've got a patchwork of organizations, and one does outreach, but another handles housing, and another does healthcare. And things that should be simple become unbelievably complicated. And at the end of the day, nobody is accountable for actually getting the person off the street.
Well, they call me Sarge.
Sarge, okay.
Yeah.
Is that because you're a
sergeant? Was.
Uh-huh, in the Marines?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I was in from 65, 69. Mm-hmm. I was a DI for a while, a drill instructor, and then was deployed, you know, to Vietnam. Served four tours.
I'm crouched down on the sidewalk, about a half a block up from one end of Veterans Row, outside the VA campus gates. Talking to a man I've never seen here before. He's sitting on a dead electric scooter, surrounded by bags of clothes and other belongings on the ground. He's wearing green scrubs and a U.S. Marines baseball cap. He tells me his name is Dennis John Schulte. He's 75 years old, and he's been in and out of homelessness for 40 years.
Tried to find my place, and I haven't found it yet. So I don't have any lifelong friends.
More recently, he had a home in the VA's one apartment building on campus, but didn't like it and left. Then his scooter crapped out almost immediately, and now he's just sitting here. He's wadded up some clothes to cushion his seat. I see that his legs look swollen and covered with crusty red sores. He says he was recently in the VA hospital to treat them.
They discharged me. It was much worse than this. When they discharged me,
did a social worker come or anything and try to, get you into a place that's not the street or anything like that?
Yeah, but they hand you this mimeographed, and they just list the places that you can call, and they'll send you, like you go down to Skid Row, and I go, yeah, right. They didn't even call them, so I just went back out to the street, you know.
While we're talking, a couple of people in medical scrubs come off the VA campus and stop to offer Dennis a water and a granola bar.
Good morning. We have water from
Houston. Oh, kind. Oh, yeah. I see you have some Kind bars. You got any Kind bars for me? Have you ever had one of those?
Oh, I've had them.
Boy, I love those things, man.
One late afternoon, a week later, Dennis waves me down while I'm walking to my car. Dennis points to a mattress on the sidewalk a few feet away, where another older man is passed out. Dennis says the man just got out of the VA hospital, and Dennis is worried because the other man has no food, no water, nowhere to go. The guy on the mattress comes too and shows me his hospital band. His name is Ronald Barlish. Ronald doesn't want me to call 911. I ask if he would go to a shelter, if he could. He says yes. And then I have no idea who to call. Admission hours for most of the places on the VA campus have passed, as far as I know. So I call Rob. He gives me the number of the VA's one and only street outreach worker for the entire west side of Los Angeles, Manny. But Manny has gone home for the day. So I text Manny about Ronald and tell Ronald to stay put until the morning. Driving home, I take out my cell phone to dictate some notes into a voice memo. I'm surprised at how emotional I am.
I did ask the guy if there was a family member or anything like that that I could call. He said no. So Dennis is going to keep an eye on him, but doesn't have a phone. Meanwhile, Dennis is sitting in the exact same position that he was in 1 week ago when I was here last Thursday. And he's very sunburned. It just really upset me.
Manny followed up the next morning, but Ronald was gone. Not long after that, Dennis was too. Some of the unhoused veterans living in tents at Veterans Row found him on the ground next to his scooter, incoherent, and called an ambulance. I called up Matt McGarren, the man in charge of the VA's homelessness programs. I described the situation and asked him if there was something different I should have done. He said Ronald could have gone back to the hospital. There's a social worker there until 8. But the hospital is about a 20-minute walk from where Ronald was on that mattress.
It is a gap in our services that we do recognize now that we do need a number visible, like a sign or some sort of a poster where we could put up a number that somebody could call, where they could get in touch with the social worker down at the medical center who could make a referral to a shelter.
A sign with an after-hours phone number. So simple, but it could make a big difference. A year and a half later, though, those signs still aren't posted. Next time, a new group promises to get rid of Veterans Row. The cops. City of Tents, Veterans Row is written, reported, and hosted by me, Anna Scott. Our story editor is Audrey Quinn. Executive produced by Sonia Geis. Mixed, scored, and sound designed by Ray Guarna, with music provided by Megatrax. Production help and fact-checking by Alexandra Applegate. Special thanks to Lou Olkowski, Ryan Kyloff, Bob Carlson, Jason DeRose, and Karellen Madison.